Please join me in the book of Judges, chapter number 15. We're going to begin at verse number 11 in just a moment. We're looking at the beginning of Samson's service as a judge, and he's going to be a military-style judge fighting against the Philistines. Now, his service begins with a personal battle with the Philistines. Remember, he got himself married to a Philistine woman. That marriage service ended up with him losing a bet to 30 Philistine companions, and he paid the bet by killing off or at least severely beating up a bunch of other Philistines. Then he stormed off home. His wife was married off to one of his 30 companions. And so when he comes back later and finds that out, it makes him mad. And so he sets 150 pairs of foxes with lit torches loose into the grain fields and the grain storage areas and the orchards of Timnath. And the Philistines, having lost all of that very expensive product, execute his wife and his father-in-law. And so Samson responds by killing a whole bunch of them. And then he takes off into Judea territory and takes refuge in a place called the Rock of Etam. And that's right around where a Philistine arrest party catches up with him. They bring a military force into Judah. The Judeans come and ask what the invasion is all about, and they are told that they are there to arrest Samson for crimes against the Philistines. And so that's where the Judeans decide to go and capture Samson themselves and extradite him into the Philistines' hands. So that's the story where we pick it up. Judges 15:11. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam. So that's how serious they are taking this. They take a huge force. And they said to Samson, "Do you not know," or maybe we'd even say understand, "do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us?" Because we're talking about a region, a borderland region between the Danites on the north and the Judeans on the south, along a couple of trade routes that go up from the Mediterranean coast through wadis, that is wet weather stream valleys, up toward the central portion of the Israeli-occupied area, the Canaanite area that now is under Israeli control, up toward where Jerusalem will eventually be. So that borderland, probably only a dozen miles across, is the region that has now come under the boot of the Philistines. And the Judeans have accepted that as a reality. And Samson is messing with the balance between themselves and the Philistines. So that's why they want to arrest him and turn him over to the Philistines. He said back to them, "As they did to me, so I've done to them." So this is just a tit for tat. This is a back and forth thing between us. They said to him, "We have come down to bind you that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. So we are here to arrest you. And then we are going to extradite you. We're going to hand you over to them for judgment because of all this stuff that you've been doing recently." And remember, this is all happening within a few months' time. "Samson said to them, 'Swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves.' And they said to him, "No, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you." So they make him a promise. "We're not going to be the ones executing you. We're leaving that to the Philistines. All we want to do is tie you up and hand you over to them." So he agrees, and they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. Now, when he came to Lehi, and that's the name that will be applied to this place shortly, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. So wherever the agreed upon exchange area is, that's where the Philistines see Samson all tied up, and they figured, now we're going to be able to take this guy and probably torture him, is what was in their mind, and then we'll kill him off because of all the trouble that he's caused. That is when this happens. "Then the spirit of he who is rushed upon him." We've seen that now, including this time, three times that phrase is used about Samson. Each one of them is a representation of supernatural physical strength coming into his body. You probably shouldn't think of Samson as some sort of huge, muscle-bound giant of a man. He's just more than likely an ordinary-looking 20-year-old. Because that's pretty close to how old he must be at this time. And what happens from time to time is that God's supernatural energy enters that body and gives it the ability to do a lot more than what it should be able to do normally. So that's what happens right here. "And the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that has caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands." This is to express that he flexes, and immediately it just breaks these two brand new ropes to pieces. They just pop. They snap as if they were nothing. "And he then found a fresh jawbone of a donkey." Now, why there's a dead donkey lying there, I have no clue. It could be that what we're talking about is a fairly freshly made sickle, because it was not uncommon for the farmers of that time to take the jawbone of an animal and remove the teeth and instead put little pieces of metal, sharpened metal, in the place and bind up a handle on it and use this as a cutting implement because kind of got the shape of a sickle already. So maybe, just maybe, it's a little freshly made jawbone sickle tool that he saw there. But however it was he got a hold of it, how fresh it was, he put his hand to it, and he took it, and he starts swinging it. And with it, he struck 1,000 men. So he kills 1,000 of these Philistines that had come to take him off for execution with the jawbone of a donkey. "And then Samson said, 'With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have struck down 1,000 men.' And as soon as he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and the place was called Ramat Lahi, or Ramat Lehi, which means in Hebrew, the hill of the jawbone." And it's kind of got a double meaning here. The heaps here could be, or the heaps could be the high place on which this incident took place, because that's the usual sense that Ramat gets used, or Ramot. But remember, he piled up great big piles of dead bodies as well. And so that might be. This is piles of dead bodies that got there by the work of a jawbone. And so that's how it gets its name. It's got to be somewhere on the Judah side, likely, of this border between Dan and Judah with Philistine control coming up from the west. So somewhere right in that region. Verse 18 reports that he was very thirsty. It probably took a while for him to kill 1,000 guys that were trying to kill him. And so he needs to be rehydrated. And so he calls upon He Who Is and said, "You have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant." So he sensed that his supernatural empowerment came from the Creator, from the God of the Israelis, from He Who Is. He understood that he could never have done this on his own strength. He did it by God's supernatural strength. So he confesses that. But notice what he says next. "And shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" So he's complaining to God. "Are you going to let me die of thirst or be grabbed by the Philistines because I'm passed out from dehydration after you used me to do this?" And so God, in his sovereign kindness, split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned and he revived. So God does something here like he had done for the Israelites in the wilderness back in the Exodus time. He opens up a brand new supernatural water source and supplies Samson with the ability to rehydrate. And so verse number 19 finishes with, "Therefore he called the name of the place An HaKoreh." It's at Lehi to this day. And that means it's the spring of He Who Called. So Samson gives it the name of, this is the place where God sprang up a well to me when I called. And then verse 20 gives us the summary for what happens over the next 20 years. "And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So Samson effectively keeps the Philistines at bay in this border region of Dan and Judah, and Simeon is also down in that same area. He keeps the Philistines under control for the next 20 years. We don't have too many of the specifics as to how he accomplished that, but he must have had regular military fights with them, because they'd probably fallen into the habit of coming up and taking whatever it was that they wanted, or maybe maintaining some sort of tax situation with the Israelis over the last 10 years, 20 years before this. So the next 20 years after he becomes the new military leader, he keeps them at bay. Now, chapter 16, the first part of it, is an incident that we don't exactly know where it fits into the story time-wise. So sometime during this 20-year period, Samson went to Gaza. Now, Gaza is the great big southernmost city of the Philistines. And it's fairly well known to us today because there's always a lot of tension down in that area between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So it's about 40-some road miles from where Samson is maintaining his judgeship in the borderlands. So he goes down there and he saw a prostitute and he went into her. So he's got a desire to have a sexual encounter. He goes more about a day or slightly more than a day's walk away from where he normally judges. And he gets involved with a prostitute. Now, the Gazites were told Samson has come here. So he is well known. He is notorious with the Philistines for causing them trouble. And they discover he's in their town. So they surrounded the place. They set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night saying, "Let us wait till the light of the morning. Then we will kill him." So they figure they've got him pinned inside because you normally lock the city gates after the sun has gone down at some point, and you don't open them back up again until right around dawn the next day. So they figure they're going to be able to catch him trying to leave the city the next morning, and then they'll be able to execute him. Well, verse 3, Samson apparently finds out about this. Samson lay till midnight. And at midnight he arose, and he took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, and pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders, and carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. Now, the Hebron that is mentioned here is not likely to be the Hebron that is several tens of miles to the east of Gaza. It is probably another Hebron that is located near the city of Gaza. There is even a rise to the east of Gaza that is still identified by some Bible commentators as the likely location of this event. Now, cities have more than one style of gate that we're talking about here. There is the one gate that's really big, and it's allowing for wheeled traffic and large numbers of people to pass through. That's probably not the type of gate that he carried away. That would, even if he had supernatural strength, it would be very ungainly for him to carry something that size. But almost all gates had associated with them a little pedestrian gate where people could pass through one or two at a time. And it might be set into the main gate or it might be set right near the main gate. Sometimes these would later be referred to as sortie gates because they allowed rapid passing in and out of the city. By individuals. Probably this is the gate that we're talking about, is that he just basically grabbed hold of the framework of this gate and rocked it in and out until it popped out of the wall frame. And then he carries that whole thing up to the top of this hill, evidently east of the city of Gaza. And that is a surprising thing for a guy to be able to do. Then that story ends, other than the fact that we understand that the Philistines didn't get him, but they want to get him. And then we come to the final story of his life and ministry as a judge. Verse 4. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. So he falls in love again, 20 years after the first woman he fell in love with. Both of them were Philistines. And this one's name is Delilah. When the leaders of the Philistines, the five cities, figure out that Samson is coming on a regular basis to see this woman. They see her as an opportunity to capture him. So verse number 5, the lords of the Philistines came to her, and they said to her, seduce him, and then see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Now, there's 5 lords of the Philistines. So all told, we're talking about 5,500 pieces of silver. Now, at this time, there were not coins being used. That comes much later in history. They used weighted chunks of silver. And these weights were typically standardized. One of the weights that we commonly are familiar with is a shekel. So let's just use that as an example here. If this is a shekel weight of silver that we're talking about, they were promising her the equivalent of 11,000 days' wages. So she is being promised many, many years' worth of living if she will just turn over this guy that is in love with her. And she apparently is going to give into that offer. So verse 6, Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you may be bound that one could subdue you. So she's, you know, pillow talk, because they're involved sexually here. Let's not make any bones about that. She, during the pillow talk, says, look, tell me how come you can be so strong from time to time. What's the secret? And Samson said to her, well, if they were to bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, well, then I'd become weak and be like any other man. So he spins this yarn, this story. Oh, you know what? If they took freshly made bowstrings, 7 of them, and tied me up with them, oh, I would lose my supernatural strength. So she passes this information on. So the lords of the Philistines brought up to her, notice they give it to her, 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber. And so she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson! But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire, and so the secret of his strength was not known. So what's happening here is that she is pretending to be engaged in some play with him, that this is some sort of lover's game. She's got Philistines hiding in the closet or somewhere nearby, but they're not going to come out unless she calls for them. And she's not going to call for them unless it's obvious that what she does to him in this supposed play session actually works. So there's some strange relationship here between Samson and Delilah. So she ties him up with the fresh bowstring supplied to her by the Philistine leaders, and then wakes him up. Oh, Samson, Philistines are here. They're going to get you. And he immediately snaps them off like they were nothing. And she knows, well, that didn't work. So Delilah said to Samson, behold, you've mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. So she accuses him of not playing fair in the game. She wants to be involved in this little bondage play. He said to her, well, If they were to tie me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So he changes the story, comes up with a new version. And this is not all happening the same night, by the way. This is happening over several nights. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and then said to him, "The Philistines are upon you." And the men in ambush, lying in ambush, were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. So play a little bondage game again. But when she wakes him up, he pops them off like they were nothing. So Delilah said to Samson, "Well, until now you've mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound." So he said to her, "Well, if you were to weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with a pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." Now notice, as we're running out of time today, he is now starting to play closer to the truth, where he believes his strength comes from, and that is his Nazirite hair. He has long hair that's never been caught. By now, he's approaching his 40th birthday, probably. And he wears it in 7 braids. So he tells her, "Well, you know what? If someone were to put my braids, my 7 braids, into a weaving device, into a loom, and weave it in, and then lock it up, that's what would take my strength away." And so what does she do? Same thing she's been doing. While he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head and wove them into the web. She made them tight with a pin and then said to him, "Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And once again, the little bondage play did not happen the way she hoped.